Almost Live from Nigel, it's time for this week's Hard Man Newspapers podcast.
Hello, I'm Andy Dalrymple, and welcome to this week's Hard Man Newspapers podcast, Almost Live from Nigel. This week, area plans for the South, lockdown nutrition, and fundraising cycles. To try and give you a taster of this and some of the other news that's been hitting our headlines in our print titles and, of course, online at iomtoday.co.im, I'm joined by Newshound Sam Turn.
Hello.
Newshound's Jess Ward.
Hello.
And Distribution's very own Katie Kitchener.
Hello.
Hello, guys. Welcome to our weekly Zoom chat. How's everyone doing? Jess, I see you're under a blanket there.
Yeah, I'm freezing. I've been trying to change different rooms because I find, like, when you are working in your bedroom, you just can't get sleep. So just been changing the environment, I guess. And also, I've just got major cabin fever, so I just need to get out.
Sam, you're, of course, still in Isle of Man Newspapers HQ. I think everyone else has gone home, so I know there's only a couple of you in there at the moment anyway. But you're not in Nigel. You're in the actual main office part today.
Yeah, look at where the magic happens. This is like Disney behind the scenes.
All I can see is a lot of grey, basically, which I doesn't think tells the full story of the colourful work environment that you usually work in.
If Sam moves to the side, you should be able to see all the postcards, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course.
All the listener postcards.
So Sam has just sent from the Distribution Hub, which has all our postcards that you've sent in to us, dear listener, but also has the distribution bar.
It does. That's where you can have your espresso martinis made up.
Sam has just run over. Sam, what have they got in the distribution bar?
I'm glad you asked, Andrew.
Oh, no, it actually got taken by a member of the team last week.
No, what? It's in, there's a bottle of vodka back here.
The vodka, but the Kahlua's gone. Well, there was a Kahlua shortage, I believe, on the island, because obviously...
There's little cocktail mixers.
Martinis
it's
at home. Going. The mixers. There should be some martini glasses there too, I think.
There's martini glasses. There's also a couple of Easter eggs back here.
Katie, good week. How are we on lockdown week 6?
Feels like it's been forever. So this was the week I've been in Malta. I've been in my house instead.
Have you had some Maltesers to sort of pick your spirits up?
No. I have been wearing a dressing gown a lot, though, because we were staying in a hotel and spa, so I thought that recreates the spa-like feeling.
I was just going to say before we start, this is probably the longest consecutive run where we've all four of us have done the podcast, actually.
Yeah.
Well, Judith hasn't been going off on holiday, and Jess hasn't been taking afternoons off, so...
Haven't been slacking.
You know, I'm dedicated to the podcast.
Right, starting off with the first story of the week, Sam. It's one of your pet loves. It's planning applications, and it's a big one. I remember we discussed this in a podcast that sort of towards the end of last year. It's about the area plans. This one in particular focuses on the South and was detailed in the Isle of Man Examiner this week. But you're going to tell us why there might be some changes made, aren't you?
Okay, so if you remember back to last year, we had the area plan for the East, which is still going. It's about to go through Tim Wooden in July. The area plan has based this idea to zone all the land on the island for what they're going to be. So they could be like a housing development, they could be a school, or they could stay as a field. And the one for the South was done about 7 years ago, and it was completed to put through Tim Ward. And then they've got to this stage now where they've gone, oh, we need some more houses in Castletown. I mean, the actual inspector's report says you don't. There's no evidence that you need houses in Castletown. But they had this application for Knock Rushen, which is Hartford Homes, and they wanted to build 48 homes there, and it got turned down. What's mad is that the person who recommended it got rejected was Michael Hurley, who is the actual guy behind the area plan for the East. So he's saying now this development's not consistent with the area plan for the South. So Castletown commissioners have said, oh, well, we need to review the area plan for the South then, because it's not doing what we want. And then the government sort of going, yeah, we could look at it. But what's mad is just like the idea that, you know, we have this great idea to zone the island. We've done one part of it, and less than 10 years later, we're going, yeah, we don't like that. So I just think it proves that the whole idea of an area plan is a bit mad and pretty pointless.
So has the coronavirus pandemic slowed things down at all with this, or was it, this was always the pace it was going to move?
No, this is always, the area plan for the East has always been moving at this pace, really. It sort of arrived surprisingly the back end of last year. We were expecting it sort of like the early part of this year. It suddenly arrived the back end of December. And then it was always due to go before Timbled in July. And that is currently still the target. The only thing that may push that off course is we excitingly now know there will be a budget in July, which will be the second budget this year. So we can look forward to another budget special.
Wowzers. That's probably worthy of a Sam Turton sound effect.
Jess is sat with that blanket and it looks like she's just the most bored child in history. It's like, I was promised Disney and I've got the Expo convention on hand washing.
That'd be pretty relevant right now, to be honest.
Yeah.
To be honest, I was just, obviously Jess is in the bottom corner of my screen and you can see the blue background on a wall, the sea, and then you've got a blue blanket on, so I can, it's just like a floating head.
Yes. Yeah.
So you said the commissioners are going to review what's happened. What do you think will happen next then? Will they kick it back towards government's direction or what?
Well, yeah, the only way it can get changed is via cabinet office, and so that would be the Minister for Policy and Reform, and not the Minister for Policy and Silly Walks, as I like to call him, Chris Thomas, who essentially he said that they may carry out a review, they may look at it, but he's going to sort of basically engage with developers and with local authorities and with residents to decide what they want to do. Because at the end of the day, the south of the island has got a lot of room on it, so just because they couldn't build there doesn't mean they can necessarily just build somewhere else. Do you think about this site is it was pretty close to the airport, which I don't think worked in its favour, and it was down by the sea. So, you know, there's elements of this that I think went against it. So, you know, there's a lot of room to build on the island at the end of the day, but as we all know through my frequent lectures on the area plan, the island's population fell up until 2016. And there's no evidence that it has recovered to pre-2011 levels. So, is there any...
Take anything home from that, this podcast, kids, it's that, isn't it?
Yeah, that and stay in school, but only if your parents are key workers.
Right, there was more on that in this week's Isle of Man Examiner, which is, of course, on sale now in all shops. But also, if you want to buy a digital edition, Katie, you can do that by going onto our website, www.iontoday.co.im. Clicking on the digital editions tab, can't you? And then it's all pretty self-explanatory from there, isn't it?
It is. It's so easy. And you can buy a year's subscription, or you can just buy one copy for £1.
Right. A pound. Absolute bargain.
A pound. 10p cheaper than the version.
You're listening to the Isle of Man Newspapers podcast, almost live from Nigel.
Jess, moving on. The next story is about an interesting feature you've done this week, which we also featured in this week's Examiner. It's about people's nutrition and diet during lockdown. Now, I think you said last week you've been maybe having a few snacks. Maybe a bit of messy
thing. You would be wouldn't be correct. Honestly, it's so many. It's a problem having avid bakers in your house. Like Steph, my sister, is just, she's pumping out the brownies. Mum's on the cheese scones and the fudge, and it's heaven, but it's also a little bit of hell, I guess. And yeah, I just find it. I think it's probably just emotional eating. You know, you're in a stressful situation, and so. I know a lot of people, like a lot of my friends are saying, like, we joke about it, like, oh, I'm going to, when it comes to the end of pandemic, people are going to have to roll me out of the house because it's going to get to that stage. But yeah, I just thought it was quite interesting because, well, if we're all in this kind of same boat situation, maybe we should look at it a bit more in depth. And then one of, I got in contact with a woman who is recovering from anorexia. And she was giving her side of how the pandemic is affecting her, and something that I'd not even considered, to be honest. And yeah, it's quite concerning, I guess, how people in that situation could be suffering due to restrictions. So I got in touch with the Department of Nutrition and, I don't know if I'm going to say it right, but dietetics.
Right.
I guess that's how. Yeah, that's a new one for me. And so they gave me some background information as well as advice, and it was really good. And basically they were just saying, right, well, emotional eating will have increased, of course, with what's happening in the world. But the thing to take away from it really is to just offer yourself some compassion. So they were saying that reaching for food is a form of comfort, and it's not inherently bad, and that a certain amount of non-hungry eating is completely normal. It can become a problem in the longer term if someone feels food is their only way of coping with difficult emotions. So that's what they say about that. They say that our brain uses a huge amount of energy each day, and it's important that it receives the fuel it needs in order to function. If emotional eating is a problem, offer yourself compassion. Have a think about your emotional toolbox, and if there are other coping strategies that might be a bit more helpful, such as what do you think about what you actually need right now? Do you need to just get some fresh air and some sunlight, or maybe to call a friend? And yeah, so when I spoke to this woman who has anorexia and she's recovering from it, she just said basically what she's worried about is restrictions when it comes to shopping, because you know you can't go out as freely as you would do. And she said before she would spend a long time going up and down the aisles, kind of comparing, contrasting food items. But now you can't do that. You have to go through a one-way system. And she said that with her mindset, or people's mindset when they have anorexia, they come up with excuses as to why they can't eat. And so she says, oh, I could have really done with some cheese back in that aisle, but I've gone past it now, so I can't go back and grab it. Yeah, so basically it just, she says it's very much a condition where it's just, it survives off denial and deceit. And yeah, and she also said the fact that we are encouraged to exercise away from people, that can also lead to excuses of, right, I need to go to more extreme lengths to do my exercise. And she said also another problem was, as you guys have probably seen on your social media, lots of videos of people doing fitness workouts. It's kind of, she said, in your mind, you kind of giving yourself the excuse of, oh, I need to be doing this. And so before you know it, you're exercising all day and you haven't eaten enough because you've told yourself, I've been sitting around, I don't need to eat because I haven't really exerted that much. So, yeah, and she gives me the story basically of how she was, you can't be diagnosed with anorexia, but you have to admit that you have it. And she said how difficult it was, but she said that at the time she was having heart palpitations and her fingernails had completely crumbled away, and she was not able to concentrate. And it was actually colleagues that came to her and said, right, something needs to happen. And so they went through it with her and were really supportive. So yeah, I mean, her story is all there in the Examiner on page 22, I believe. And it is really interesting. And I think it's something that we need to think about. And actually, on that piece, the health department has got in touch with me and they've said, we're working on an initiative, a UK initiative, where we're trying to encourage more of the elderly group to think about their dehydration, because that's a big problem for them. So I'll be doing a follow-up and at some point probably next week on that.
Yeah, fascinating subject that, Jess, and as you say, it's in the Examiner this week, so please do keep an eye out for that. And while we're on the sort of subject of lockdown snacks, has there been a food type that you guys have sort of rediscovered over this period? Now for me, it's been bagels. Now I wouldn't say I was a bagel lover before this all kicked off, but some happened to make their way to the bread bin, presumably my wife bought them. And I've had a couple the last couple of days, and I can't get enough of them.
They're so good, aren't they? Do you have a specific type? I love the cinnamon ones.
Mine's just plain with a bit of cream cheese and a ham. Very nice.
That is good.
I'll put it in a toasty, just warm it up a little bit. You know. Is there anything you guys have rediscovered? Sam, what's been your lockdown snack of choice?
So the garage over the road has had like these chipsticks that are like £1 a bag.
What flavour?
Salt and vinegar. I don't know if I've still got it. No, I haven't still got it here. But that
got today's bag with it.
No, I haven't actually. So I suppose that's sort of the big one. And but now the burrito guy, the Mexican's back open.
Of course.
So yeah. I can go see him as well for lunch now. So
I do miss him.
It's nice to see a friendly face.
Jess, what have you been sort of enjoying over lockdown?
Ugh, Andy, I've been eating everything. It's ridiculous. I don't have a favorite. I would say my go-to, I've become more of a sweet tooth. My family complains a lot because I just don't leave anything there for them. It's so bad. So it's like cookies or like, yeah, like I said, when mum and dad or mum's, my sister bake, I'll eat whatever they baked. It's so bad. I have no control.
Okay.
I've been trying not to buy too many snacky foods. I don't cook in my house as well, so I tend to just eat what I'm given. But we've been eating a lot of pork products recently, which is interesting because I didn't think I liked pork. So,
very versatile meat, pork. Well, I'm glad we've all shared that insight to the listener.
You're listening to the Isle of Man Newspapers podcast, almost live from Nigel.
Moving on to my sports story of the week, and we talk about snacks and make, trying to get the exercise to burn off the calories that we've all, I mean, we've all had a packet of chocolate hobnobs or whatever. I don't know if you saw the story in the Manx Independent this week. I think we talked about it briefly last week. Johnny Epifani works for Manx Sport and Recreation. He's one of the sports development officers there. Did a challenge, a fundraising challenge in aid of the Isle of Man Food Bank last week. And he decided that he was going to ride on his indoor cycling turbo trainer for 24 hours and see how much money he could raise. He actually clocked 771 kilometres, which I've worked out is further than it would be if he'd been riding from Glasgow to London in 24 hours. So he's raised, he doesn't know quite how much he's raised to the food bank because he's encouraging people to donate straight to the food bank, and people have also donated food as well as money. But he reckons he's seen messages where people have said they've donated hundreds of pounds. So it's a phenomenal effort, and hopefully people have got behind it, because he said it's a cause that some people may have forgotten about at the moment, but it's one that's being stretched as incomes are, and they're getting more users at the food bank than ever before at the moment. So he was saying, yeah, 771 kilometres. He said his feet swelled up after about 10 hours. So he had to, every time he got off to have a pee, he had to put his ice in, his feet in ice. Then for the last 4 hours, one of his knees went. So he was a little bit disappointed because he wanted to break 500 miles in 24 hours. And I think he did 450-ish. But even so, he had to slow down a little bit because of his knee. But what a phenomenal effort. So well done, G. And actually, following up on that, there's lots of people doing fundraising efforts at the moment. I know you've spoken to some a guy that's doing 2.6 miles, isn't he, Jess? And then there's a guy, Christian Varley, who's, again, works at the NSC, but is a more than capable runner. He's doing, I mean, I don't know if you've seen this, this is in the Courier this week. He's doing 19 marathons in 19 days. That is phenomenal.
I couldn't believe it. I read that, honestly.
I just can't get my head around it. It's just unbelievable, isn't it?
I think Eddie Izzard levels.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I can't remember. How long did he do it for? A week? Was it? Or 10 days?
I thought his was like 10 days, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, Christian's hoping to do it for 19, which is phenomenal, really. So, you can read more about that in the Courier this week. And Johnny's effort, as I say, there's more about that in the Independent. But fair play to all these people that are trying to do their bit to raise a bit of money for various causes at this time. And so it leads us on nicely to our new Isle of Man Newspapers initiative, which is community kindness, which is, we're trying to highlight people doing good things in our community, aren't we, Jess?
As always, yes.
Yeah, so if you've got a story that you think, you know, is worthy of that, please do get in touch. Email newsdesk@iomtoday.co.im. Have a look on page 3 of this week's Manx Independent. There's more details on that, and I think it will be online shortly as well. So on iomtoday.co.im.
You're listening to the Isle of Man Newspapers podcast, almost live from Nigel.
Right, Sam, This Week in History is an absolute beller. This is one of the best front pages I think we've looked at.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's obviously, it's for the Isle of Man Examiner from 1945, the May 4th edition. And it's such a brilliant piece of history. I'll let you explain it, but it's an amazing piece. And hopefully people will want to see it, and it'll be actually printed in the Examiner next week.
Yeah, well, this is sort of essentially what we picked here was that next Friday is a bank holiday. I know some people will find it hard to notice the difference at the minute. But it's a bank holiday because they've moved it to Friday instead of the Monday, the May bank holiday, for VE Day. It's the 75th anniversary. So we were thinking about what could we do as a front page, and we went back to May 1945, where we had the what banks were doing in the sort of like the last few days of the war and preparing to come home.
Yep.
So this is sort of like as they're going around, they did like a basically an overview of as many Manx people, as many Manxmen as they could find the information on, and they gave like details about, for instance, you've got let's say Gunnar Thomas Fayle, who was the son of Mr. and Mrs. Harry Fayle of Finch Road in Douglas. He was one of two brothers who served with the Manx Regiment in Crete, and he got back home on the Saturday the week before. And this is so as they're going, this is sort of as liberation of Europe's going on, and where they've got to POW camps and they found Manxmen, this is the updates they were given on them. Mm-hmm. So it's like you've got the whole front page is this. And I'll let Katie, I know Katie loves an advert, so I'll let Katie come in on the advert in the bottom left, which is fantastic. Because it's like just pure opportunism of the highest order.
I have to say, now we'll talk about the ads in a second, Sam, but I have to admire the detail in this front page as well. It must have taken quite a lot of work to put it together, because most of the pen profiles have pictures. There's details about where these guys served and where they were serving, where they were captured and what prisoner camp they were in. And all sorts of little bits like that. And, you know, we're talking 1945, and I'm guessing the Ministry of Defence might have helped out a bit, but it's an amazing effort, really, to sort of get that much detail on the front page.
Yeah, I mean, even if you just, you know, you think about back at a lot of papers we looked from then, they don't have pictures on at all. And this has got one, just a quick thing, 14 pictures on the front. Some of them got more than one person. I mean, there's a fantastic picture of W.G. Ford. He'd come back home after 4 years. He'd been overseas. And when he left, his wife had been pregnant. So he'd never met his own son. Comes back 4 years after the war.
There's a picture of him with his little boy. Yeah, he's a lovely picture. And Katie, the ads are pretty special as well, aren't they?
They are. So you have the one in the bottom left corner is VE Day. Are you ready? Stocks of flags are rapidly diminishing and restrictions prohibit the manufacture of further supplies. So obviously you wouldn't want to be the person without the flags and bunting on VE Day.
No. I also like the bizarre paint advert, which for some reason featured horse racing.
It's one of the most detailed like paint adverts I think I've ever seen in my life. Mm. Black horses jumping over a Zolak fence.
Do you reckon the advert for the VE Day will kind of reflect us when the pandemic's over, with all the flags and bunting?
I think it'll be more like fetch me the finest cocktails from across the land, but.
Hotel Sefton, of course, there, Katie, top left.
Reliable in the top left corner for food, service, comfort.
And it wouldn't be a paper from the 40s or 50s without an advert for coats, suits and gowns.
But I like that. Watch the windows. Because do you remember when window displays were a big deal and you would look to see what was when things would change?
So that was the Alman Examiner front page of Friday, May 4th, 1945. As I say, it will feature in all its glory in the Examiner next week, so please do look out for that, with a bit of commentary from the Oracle himself, John Watterson. I think he might have just been... No, he wasn't born then. I may be maybe exaggerating his age slightly. Right, moving on. Katie, yes at training?
Okay, I've got some Bee Gees facts for you.
You did mention last week we were going on a musical route, weren't we?
I've tried to find some things you might not know about them. So I've got Barry, Robin and Morris Gibb were born on the Isle of Man during the 1940s. They later went on to live in Manchester and then Australia. So then we've got produced 28 albums and are estimated to have sold over 220 million records worldwide. They're also super accomplished songwriters and they've written a lot of well-known songs. So you might not know that some of these were written by them, but Islands in the Stream by Dolly Parton.
That was the only one I knew. I was going to say Islands in the Stream.
Yeah. So that was by them. So it's Woman in Love by Barbara Streisand. The song Grease from the film Grease was by them. Chain Reaction by Diana Ross, and they also did backing vocals on that track. John Lennon was a fan of this, and they influenced the likes of Wakefield Punk's The Crips, Tame Impala, and Destiny's Child. And anyone who remembers, Destiny's Child did a cover of Emotion for their noughties album, Survivor.
I take it Islands in the Stream was inspired by the Elfman.
Yeah, well,
why not? Yeah.
Barry, if you're listening, right?
No. No. Didn't you die?
But Barry's alive. Barry's the big BG.
Hashtag fact check.
Sorry, Robin was the most recent one to die. The Bee Gees' childhood home was honoured with a blue plaque back in 2013. Robin Gibb's last album was named after the Manx address, which is 50 St Catherine's Drive. And Robin has always spoken fondly for his love of the Isle of Man. And then we are getting a statue of them on the promenade, apparently. A £150,000 statue of the three of them walking on the promenade. So, and then there's a lot of, I think, fake facts about them. And this one I thought was fake, but turned out to be true. So I read, it said Robin Gibb was a bit of an arsonist child. And I just mistrusted this. But then I found an article on The Guardian about why they emigrated to Australia. And it said the family had emigrated in 1958 at the suggestion of a Manchester policeman who feared that 12-year-old Barry's arrest for shoplifting and Robin's interest in early opening acts of a lengthy criminal career.
Grandma went to church with them in London, and she said that they'd had quite a funny past when they were like little kids. She said they were really nice.
Right, we better wrap it up because we've only got 3 minutes left on our Zoom call. Thanks for that, Katie. Where are you taking us next week? Anywhere interesting with the Yes training, or are you looking for inspiration?
There'll be a place.
Oh, exciting. Keep it vague a little bit. Sam, loads coming up next week. I take it. What's in the examiner?
Yeah, absolutely tons. I've got a fireworks committee looking at banning that. Before I get onto that, anything else, look in the Courier. Jess has got a fantastic piece with Governor Bob from ITV. Apparently he works up in something, but he's not.
Jess, you got much more up?
Quite a few pieces. So I'm hoping to get a piece about a young lady who travelled back. Just got to have a conversation with her. I'm hoping to get a piece about a woman who's turning 104, so we'll be finding out more about that. I've just had a really nice piece put in the Courier, which is coming out on Friday, and it's an initiative where people will donate the amount that they usually spend on coffee at coffee shops, which are obviously now closed, towards this initiative, which splits the money. It goes to the Manx Solidarity Fund and the Isle of Man Food Bank.
Fantastic. Right, as always, you can keep up to date with all the latest from the pandemic at iomtoday.co.im. I think we've got less than a minute left, so I better say bye-bye. And until next week...
Bye for now.